How does an employee actually qualify for the new COVID leave?
They have to be unable to work or telework because of a number of qualifying reasons. So that's a big distinction. Not only do they have to not be able to work, come into the workplace, but if they're able to work from home or telework, they're not eligible for this leave. But it's only a situation where they can neither work in the workplace nor telework.
Welcome to another NFIB California podcast. Our podcast aims to provide a deeper look into the state issues affecting Main Street small business owners. My name is Tony Malandra, NFIB California Senior Media Manager. We're proud to have this podcast supported in part by Five Star Bank, serving customers through specialized banking solutions for entrepreneurs, business owners, and community leaders in Northern California. Each podcast invites a special guest to speak on a topic of his or her expertise. Today's guest is Ben Ebbing, a partner in the Sacramento office of Fisher & Phillips LLP, who will discuss labor and employment law and what lies ahead for small businesses in 2022. Mr. Ebbing is also legislative advocate and principal of FP Advocacy LLC. He brings two decades of experience in labor and employment law to the firms he counsels, including 15 years as chief consultant to the California Assembly Committee on Labor and Employment. Mr. Ebbing has played a key role in virtually every major labor and employment issue to come before the legislature during his tenure and earned a reputation for his integrity, ability to work with diverse stakeholders on all sides, and as a skilled problem solver. Also joining us for this podcast is NFIB California's chief legislative advocate, Kevin Pedrotti, who has been working the halls of the Capitol for causes and clients for 40 years. Welcome, Kevin. Why don't you take it away?
We have with us today Ben Ebbing. Ben is our resident labor expert, and we've been fortunate to have Ben on a couple of podcasts, and we welcome Ben back again today.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to be back. I'm a big fan of Yogi Berra, and he's got his famous saying, it's like deja vu all over again. And when we talk about this supplemental COVID sick leave, it definitely feels like deja vu all over again.
It sure does. And that's how I was going to start, Ben. I was going to say, haven't we done this before?
Yeah, two or three times, actually. So originally we had, you know, Governor Newsom had an executive order that applied to the food sector from top to bottom. And then that was codified when the legislature came back in 2020 in AB 1867. And then we had SB 95 last year, which expanded that to everybody. And now, you know, we're back with a third or fourth sick leave proposal law, actually. So, yeah, we've been down this road a time or two before.
So, Ben, February 9th, Governor signed into law the new supplemental COVID sick leave. Tell us a little bit about that and how it works. And is it different from last year?
Yeah. So the general concept is the same as last year's bill. This one's a little bit different. I think the main difference is this law now has two buckets of leave. So whereas last time you essentially had 2 weeks or up to 80 hours of leave for COVID-related reasons, now there are two different 40-hour buckets. So the first bucket is essentially the same as last time. It's up to 40 hours for the same COVID qualifying reasons as last time. So you're isolating, you're experiencing symptoms, you're caring for a family member, you have a kid whose school is closed, all those reasons, employees get up to 40 hours. Then there's a second bucket of an additional up to 40 hours in a situation where the employee tests positive for COVID or they're caring for a family member who has tested positive for COVID. And the employer can require proof of the positive test in those situations. So now we essentially have two buckets of leave. The first is for all the essentially the same COVID reasons. The second is for specific for these testing positive to COVID. It's generally similar to how the bill worked last time. As Kevin mentioned, it was signed on February 9th. It goes into effect 10 days later. So that's February 19th. But it does have this retroactive aspect back to January 1. So if you had an employee who took leave previously and was not paid or was not paid at the same level for a same qualifying reason, that employee can now come forward and make a request for a retroactive payment going back to January 1. And I should mention, probably of interest to listeners of this podcast, this bill, like the law last time, applies to employers that have more than 25 employees. So you've got to hit that 26 employee threshold, then you're covered by this law.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. So you talked about this a little bit, but how does an employee actually qualify for the new COVID leave?
So, you know, similar to last time, they have to be unable to work or telework because of a number of qualifying reasons. So that's a big distinction. Not only do they have to not be able to work, come into the workplace, but if they're able to work from home or telework, they're not eligible for this leave. But it's only a situation where they can neither work in the workplace nor telework. And then the qualifying reasons, just briefly, the first, you know, they're subject to a quarantine or isolation order. Second, they're advised by a healthcare, you know, provider to isolate or quarantine. Third, they're attending a vaccine appointment for themselves or a family member. And then fourth, they're experiencing symptoms related to that vaccine or a booster. So that's a qualifying reason. The fifth qualifying reason is they're experiencing COVID symptoms and they're trying to get a diagnosis. The sixth is they're caring for a family member who has been ordered to quarantine or isolate because of COVID. And then the final reason is caring for the child whose school or place of care is closed due to COVID. So those are all generally the same qualifying reasons as last time. I would note there is one caveat with respect to the vaccine-related leave for vaccine appointments or recovering from vaccine side effects. The law now provides that the employer can limit that time to either 3 days or 24 hours. So that would be the vaccine recovery time or time spent obtaining a vaccine or a booster. If the employee can present a doctor's note that says they're continuing to experience symptoms related to the vaccine or a booster, they might be able to extend that beyond 3 days or 24 hours. But that is a new limitation that the chamber and others who were negotiating this proposal were able to get from the governor.
So the other thing that I think is sometimes confusing is, does an employee need to exhaust other leave provisions before using this leave provision?
In general, this leave is on top of other forms of leave. So it's on top of paid sick leave, PTO, vacation, and the law has language in it that says you can't force an employee to use those types of leave first. So this is generally on top of those other type of leave. There are a few type of leaves where you have some concurrent running or you may be able to get credit. And those are if you're providing supplemental paid sick leave pursuant to a local ordinance, and that local ordinance provides leave for the same reasons at the same rate of pay and everything else, those run concurrently. So you get credit for those. The other situation is if you have a specific, and it has to be specific to COVID, supplemental policy that you voluntarily run as the employer and is provided for the same qualifying reasons, that will run concurrently as well. But that's not just a general PTO policy. It really has to be something that's specific to COVID that you as the employer have adopted. So that's the general rule. One significant change I do want to note is how this relates to exclusion pay under the Cal-OSHA ETS. So remember, under the Cal-OSHA ETS, if you have an employee who's excluded from the workplace because they're a COVID case or a close contact, you're generally required to pay them exclusion pay, which is you continue their earnings. Last time around, SB 95 last year said you can have them burn through their supplemental paid sick leave before that exclusion pay requirement kicks in. That, you know, was significant to employers to sort of reduce the burden. This time, unfortunately, it takes the exact opposite approach. And according, you know, to folks who negotiated this bill, labor and the governor's office were insistent that they wanted this to change. So now the bill specifically says you cannot require an employee to burn their supplemental paid sick leave first before you pay them exclusion pay. So in essence, this new leave is in addition to that exclusion pay. So you might have employees who are paid exclusion pay and they still maintain their bank of you know, up to 80 hours for both of these buckets of leave under this new law. So that's a significant change that employers need to be aware of.
It sounds very confusing if you're an employer out there. Very, very confusing. So you talked about rate of pay. So what is the maximum amount or what is the amount of money that a person could receive for this type of COVID leave?
So like last time, the pay is capped. So the most an employee can be paid in one day is $511. The most they can be paid in the aggregate is a little over $5,110. So that overall cap remains the same. You don't have to pay more than that in the aggregate or on a daily basis for employees.
We'll be back with more from Ben Ebbink right after this.
Hi, I'm James Beckwith, President and CEO of Five Star Bank. We are excited to help bring you this series of podcasts focused on small business concerns in conjunction with the NFIB. When Five Star Bank was founded in 1999, it was business and community leaders, local entrepreneurs, who wanted to create the sort of personalized banking services they desired themselves. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. A true understanding of the needs of small business owners. I know a meaningful relationship with a banker can be hard to find. At Five Star Bank, we are responsive, understand your business, and are committed to your success. We want to be a part of your growth and a valued partner supporting your vision and your dreams. You'll find direct access to a banker, complete online and mobile business banking you need to succeed. As an SBA preferred lender, let us help you with your startup business or existing business. If you're looking to make a change, please give us the opportunity to demonstrate what our personalized banking services could mean for you. I promise you individual attention from our colleagues who understand your business and are as committed to your success as you are. You can find us online at fivestarbank.com.
We're back again with Ben Ebbink to talk about COVID sick leave.
The rate of pay issue is a little bit different this time around, a little bit better for employers. So last time around, they had various methods that you can calculate the rate of pay, regular rate of pay, and you had to provide the highest of whatever those calculations were. Now it goes back to sort of the general paid sick leave rules, which is you have a couple of different methodologies and you as the employer get to choose which of those methodologies. The first is generally the same, you know, regular rate of pay for the work week, or there's an alternative method where you can look back 90 days. But now you as the employer get to choose between those methods for calculating the rate of pay, as opposed to last time where you had to run all the calculations and pay them at the highest rate.
So under last year's bill, there were some federal tax credits that employers could take advantage of. With this, and I know that those have run out, are there any type of tax credits or just dollar for dollar credits that the state is providing under this new leave?
So the short answer is no, and this has been something of a misnomer. If you look at most of the press articles or the governor's press release, when he signed this law, he talks about tax credits in the same breath. And there was a different bill that had some tax credits. And so the media and the governor are pitching these together as if they, you know, this is paid for by tax credits. And that's unfortunately not entirely correct. There are some tax credits that are being revived that had lapsed last year. They're general tax credits related to net operating loss and research and development. So they're not specific to this leave. They're not available to all employers, so not all employers are going to be able to take advantage of those net operating loss and research and development tax credits. And more importantly, they're not necessarily a dollar for dollar tax credit specific to this leave. So unlike those federal tax credits, it's not a dollar for dollar reimbursement paid for by the government. So yes, there are some general tax credits that are coming back and may be of assistance to some employers, but there is not a dollar for dollar tax credit specific to this supplemental paid sick leave. So in general, employers are going to have to pay this out of pocket. They may have some other tax credits that may help out overall, but there's not specific dollar for dollar tax credits for this leave. And that's contrary to how you'll read the media reports. They make it sound like this is paid dollar for dollar. And unfortunately, that's just not the case.
Yeah, I would agree, Ben. That's very confusing. You know, when you and I were watching a presentation of this bill on the assembly floor, the chair of the budget committee mentioned that maybe in a future budget trailer bill, there could be some offsets for employers for this type of leave. What do you think the odds of that happening?
That will be important. I think there will be continued pushing for that. And, you know, our state is flush with dollars. We have a budget surplus, you know, based on some federal dollars that have come down and some other things. So it seems like there's plenty of potential opportunity if the state wanted to come in and provide that tax credit. I think it will really depend on how much the business community pushes the governor to make that happen. And so I think there'll be a continued push on that. Whether it happens or not remains to be seen. You know, labor kind of got what they wanted, so they don't really have any interest in being on board with tax credit. But hopefully the business community, the employer community will continue to push the governor to make that happen.
That would be wonderful if it did. Ben, a couple issues that I would put in the very technical bucket, they would be, can you tell us a little bit about the pay stub requirement for employers?
Yeah, this is one of the, you know, the more burdensome requirements last time around, and it's treated a little bit differently this time that I think should reduce the burden on employers. So last time, you do have to list this on the pay stub, and it's got to be a separate line item from regular paid sick leave. But last time, you had to list the hours of available supplemental paid sick leave that an employee had on the pay stub. So for full-time employees, that's generally not too complicated, but it was really complicated for part-time employees or employees that have variable schedules, because essentially that's a running calculation and you have to recalculate that every 2 weeks to come up with what their available allotment of hours. And that was burdensome. You had to run that calculation every 2 weeks, put it on your pay stub, you know, quite burdensome, particularly for smaller employers. This time around, it's different. And the law says you have to list the amount of leave the employee has used rather than the amount of time they had available. So that's a more straightforward calculation. You just list how many hours they've used rather than how many hours they have available. So hopefully that will be an easier calculation and less burdensome for employers moving forward.
Yeah. And Ben, one other that was confusing to me and is I'll just call it the regular rate of pay calculation. How does that work?
I sort of discussed this a little bit earlier. So last year, you had a number of specified methods for determining the regular rate, and you had to provide the highest. So that was complicated and burdensome because you had to run all of the calculations and pay which one was the highest. This time, it's more like the regular paid sick leave calculation. You have methodologies that are set forth, and you can use either of those methodologies. Essentially, either you calculate the regular rate of pay for the work week in which the leave was used, or in the alternative, you can look back the past 90 days and make a calculation on the regular rate of pay. You now have that choice as to which methodology you want to make. You don't have to provide the higher of those methodologies.
Well, Ben, you know, we're only 5 weeks into the new calendar year, and I think February 18th is the deadline for bill introductions. We've heard a lot of rumors about other bills that may be introduced, and some of them confusing to me, given that it seems like the state is starting to open up and that, you know, we're starting to live with COVID. And we've been hearing a lot about employer vaccine mandates. Do you think that's still out there?
Well, it seems like it is. As you note, you know, it seems a little unusual that we would be considering a vaccine mandate for employers in California when the Biden administration's mandate was knocked down by the courts and they basically rescinded it. And as you know, we are sort of, it appears that we're moving forward, opening up, getting rid of mask mandates and other things as knock on wood, we're getting past the Omicron variant. But we are hearing reports that Assemblymember Buffy Wicks, who had a proposal at the end of the legislative session last year, is circulating language and appears to be bringing back a proposal that would mandate employers to require vaccines. So we don't have a lot of details yet on the particulars, but I do think based on what we're hearing, it appears likely that there will be a legislative proposal that requires employers to mandate vaccines. And as you mentioned, the federal conversation on this has sort of moved on now that the Biden administration proposal has been defeated and rescinded. But as I have been telling people, regardless of what happens to that federal proposal, you know, I thought it was likely that California would be entertaining a proposal to mandate vaccines. So we've got a long road on that. You know, a bill proposal needs to be introduced, it needs to be negotiated and go through the process. And then it will be, you know, an open question as to whether the governor would sign something. But I definitely think we are going to see a vaccine mandate proposal in California. As early as this week, it could be introduced. So.
Well, it sounds like another topic that we could have you back on and discuss further. Ben, we appreciate your time as always. These are very technical issues, and we're glad that you're able to talk our members through some of these, you know, issues. And we hope to have you again soon.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here. And as you said, I'm sure we'll be back talking about another COVID-related legislative proposal in California in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. And thank you, Ben Ebbing, for your valuable and highly informative insights on this podcast. Again, we'd like to thank Five Star Bank for its generous support of this and future podcasts. You can find all NFIB California's podcasts at nfib.com/ca/podcasts. You can also find our podcasts on your favorite podcast app by searching NFIB California. I would also like to thank MultiPoint Content Strategies for its production of this podcast. You can learn more about them at multipointstrategies.com. Why podcast for small business? It has been NFIB's educational mission for 78 years to remind policymakers that small businesses are not smaller versions of big businesses, and that a one-size-fits-all rule, regulation, or tax can do Main Street enterprises more harm than good. We hope these podcasts aid in better understanding. Finally, thank you to our listeners. If you like what you heard, please share this episode, subscribe, and give us a positive rating. We would appreciate it.